Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Affiliates. Not available in all states and situations. Prices may vary on how you buy.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills. But it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
What is dadication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today is going to be a solo episode. Austin's pretty busy, and so I just wanted to at least get this knocked out to give you guys something to get you through until next week when I get him back on the show. So today's episode has been highly requested. In fact, I was actually just on the radio with Jenny Matthews for Q104. If you guys are in the Kansas City area, you might be familiar with this country radio station. Jenny Matthews is a buddy of mine. I love going to host the morning show with her. It's like one of my favorite things. It makes waking up at 4 a.m. feel like a treat. It's just so easy. I love doing it. But while I was there hosting the show with her, we got a text from someone asking if we've covered this case. And I was like, actually, yes, I have it already written and I just need to sit down and record it. So that is what I'm doing now. Today, we are diving into a case and it is still unfolding. So stay tuned for updates as more details emerge. But this one is wild. It's been making headlines as the Kansas Moms Murders or sometimes God's Misfit Murders. Now, before we get into it, I do just want to emphasize that there's a lot that is still kind of up in the air, but I will give you everything we know as of now. This case just happened in March of this year. So yeah, it's pretty recent, but let's go ahead and get into it. Veronica Claire Butler was born on February 28th of 1997 in Guymon, Oklahoma. Her parents, Clinton and Amanda, split up and both remarried, but they stayed in Guymon where Veronica grew up.
She was smart, valedictorian of her high school, and at the time of her death, she was studying to become a surgical technologist at Seward County Community College, which was about an hour away in Liberal, Kansas. Those who knew her described her as compassionate and always helping others. She worked as a certified nursing assistant and helped at multiple nursing homes. People also say she was an amazing cook. Biscuits and gravy were her specialty, something that she learned from her mom. But above all, Veronica's biggest passion in life was being a mother to her two kids. Now, here is where things get kind of tricky. Her ex, Wrangler Rickman, yeah, Wrangler is his name, just like the jeans, is the father of her children, and he paints a very different picture of Veronica as a mother. And while I'm not a fan of speaking ill of the dead, especially when they are victims, these details are important because they're directly tied to the custody battle that ultimately led to where we are now. So Wrangler and Veronica's relationship was really toxic. They were never married, and things were always on and off between them. Eventually, they did split for good, but that did not mean things ever got easier. In fact, Wrangler filed for joint custody of their kids in 2019, with Veronica being the primary custodial parent. At first, things seemed to be working, but then they started to unravel. Veronica moved the kids out of state without notifying Wrangler or the court, which is a big no-no. Over the next 2 years, she moved the kids 4 times across 3 states. And Wrangler claims that whenever the kids would return to him, they were hungry, scared, and didn't want to go back to their mom's custody. In June of 2020, Wrangler took the case to court, asking for full custody, citing that Veronica was an unfit parent. He presented witnesses, including a CPS worker who testified that Veronica had made false abuse claims against Wrangler. She accused him of harming the kids, but each investigation turned out to be baseless. On top of that, Veronica's parenting was called into question because she allegedly left her kids with her paternal grandmother, who made her 2-year-old daughter feed aggressive turkeys that apparently left marks on her body. And there's also an incident where her son was bitten by a dog and she never sought medical attention. I don't know how bad the bite was, but I mean, if your child is bitten by an animal, I think no matter what, you should probably seek some sort of medical attention, right? One of the most upsetting claims, though, was that Veronica allowed her brother, who had been accused of sexually abusing the children, to still be around them. And this, combined with other allegations, led to Wrangler getting full custody in 2021 and Veronica limited to once a week supervised visits. It's clear that Veronica was not perfect and she made some poor decisions, but none of that justifies what happened to her. At the time of her murder, she was working, she was going to school, she was reportedly trying to turn her life around. And Veronica is not the only victim in this story. Jillian Kelly was 39 years old, born on June 3rd of 1984 in Nebraska. She married her husband Heath in 2002, and together they had 4 children. Jillian was a devoted wife and mother. She was heavily involved in her church. Her husband was actually a pastor. And Jillian ran youth groups and was the church's secretary. She loved to travel, ride motorcycles, and cheer on the Nebraska Cornhuskers. She was the kind of person who was always there for others and put herself last. So how did these two women, Veronica and Jillian, end up in the same situation? Now, remember I mentioned that Veronica only had supervised visit with her kids. So Jillian Kelly was filling in as the supervisor on the day of the murder. Usually a woman named Cheryl supervised the visits, and Cheryl was someone that Tiffany Adams, who is Wrangler's mom, had selected. But Tiffany and Veronica had a strained relationship, to say the very least, and Tiffany made Veronica's life as difficult as possible, limiting the time with her kids. But on the day of the murder, March 30th of 2024, Cheryl was not available, so Veronica chose Jillian as the supervisor. They weren't super close, they were more like acquaintances, but Jillian was one of 3 approved supervisors. That Saturday, Veronica planned to take her kids to a family birthday party, and she and Jillian were driving to Eva, Oklahoma to pick up the kids. The handoff was supposed to happen at an abandoned gas station in a rural area known as Four Corners. However, Veronica and Jillian never made it to the pickup point. Veronica's family quickly realized something was wrong when she didn't show up at the party. They started looking for her and within a few hours found her car abandoned on a dirt road near Highway 95, just a few miles from the pickup location. It was clear from the scene that something violent had happened. There was blood found near the car, along with Veronica's glasses, a broken hammer, and Jillian's purse. The local law enforcement was called in, and soon the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation took over the case. The focus immediately shifted to the custody battle. When someone goes missing, investigators look at what's going on in their life, right? And for Veronica, the custody dispute was this obvious place to start. Tiffany Adams, Wrangler's mom, was supposed to be meeting Veronica and Jillian that morning for the pickup. But according to Tiffany, Veronica canceled the meeting at the last minute. However, Veronica's phone records showed that she was on the way to pick up Jillian when Tiffany called, and the location where her car was found was only a few miles from the pickup point. So why would Veronica pick up Jillian and then drive in that direction if the plans had ever changed? Things got even more suspicious when investigators learned that Tiffany had told Cheryl, the usual supervisor, to take some time off. Tiffany claimed she wanted to supervise the visit herself to observe how Veronica acted around the kids. Keep in mind, Tiffany was also an approved supervisor. And this level of manipulation set off red flags, and police began to suspect that this was not just a random disappearance. For 2 weeks, the public was left in the dark with little information about the case. However, on April 13th of 2024, a bombshell dropped. Four people were arrested in connection with the disappearance and murders of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. The suspects: 54-year-old Tiffany Adams, which is Wrangler's mom, her boyfriend, 43-year-old Tad Cullum, and two others, 50-year-old Cole Twombly and 44-year-old Cora Twombly. All four were charged with two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder. The very next day, April 14th, investigators announced that they had found two bodies buried 10 feet deep in a cow pasture. The bodies were inside of a chest freezer, and while they hadn't been officially identified at the time, it was obvious that they were Veronica and Jillian. This was clearly a calculated and premeditated attack in its execution, and the details revealed in the arrest affidavit give us a disturbing glimpse into what exactly went down. Now, as I mentioned earlier, blood was found near the vehicle, along with personal items from both victims. But more than that, the scene was described as deeply unsettling, hinting at a violent struggle. Investigators quickly realized this was no ordinary disappearance, so they brought in the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation to help, and that is when things really kicked into high gear. As investigators pieced together the timeline, their focus zoomed in on Tiffany Adams and her possible motives. Tiffany had the most to gain from Veronica's death because she was deeply invested in keeping the children away from their mother. The custody battle had reached a boiling point, and with Veronica likely to gain increased visitation rights in an upcoming hearing, Tiffany had her own reasons to want her out of the picture. Now, just a side note, but I feel like this story kind of combines two stories that we recently covered. One was the story of Laura Ackerson, who was killed by her ex-husband because she was about to gain more custody of her kids, and he couldn't stand to lose that kind of control. So he and his wife at the time ended up murdering her and then feeding her body parts to alligators in a swamp. Which sounds eerily similar to this situation, but also with the meddling mother-in-law, it reminds me of the story of Dan Markell, which we also recently covered. So I just feel like those two stories combined are really reminiscent of this story. But anyway, as investigators pieced together the timeline, they focused their attention on Tiffany, like I said, and they realized Tiffany did not act alone. Her boyfriend, Tad Cullum, and two partners in crime, Cole Twombly and Cora Twombly, were also involved. And these four weren't just some random group of people thrown together by circumstance. They were actually connected by something very dark. And this is where the case takes an even stranger turn. According to the daughter of Cole and Cora, the four suspects were a part of a group known as God's Misfits. Now, this group, by all accounts, has been described as kind of this anti-government, anti-establishment, unconventional religious group. And it's unclear how much of their beliefs played a role in the murders, but it's certainly a detail that I think is worth noting. Cole and Cora's daughter provided crucial information to law enforcement. She revealed that in February of 2024, Tiffany, Tad, Cole, and Cora had attempted to murder Veronica once before, but their plan fell apart when Veronica refused to leave her house. Their original idea was to stage a car accident by throwing an anvil through her windshield. And apparently they thought it would look like an accident since, according to them, anvils frequently fall off trucks. I have never known that to happen. And experts have actually weighed in on this and know anvils don't just fall off of trucks like a cartoon. But their failed attempt just shows how far they were willing to go to get rid of Veronica. Now, the group was not deterred by that first failed attempt. They regrouped and came up with another plan, one that they acted out on March 30th. And according to Cole and Cora's daughter, her parents and the others referred to their murder plot as, quote, the mission. They were determined to make sure Veronica did not make it to that custody hearing, which is very reminiscent of Laura Ackerson's case because it was literally right before that hearing where she was about to potentially gain more custody of her kids. She was turning her life around. The story is really sad. If you haven't heard it, I know I kind of spoiled it for you, but it's definitely worth listening to. Now, what's even more disturbing is that after the murders, her parents came home and asked their 16-year-old daughter to clean out their truck. They told her that things didn't go as planned, but reassured her that they wouldn't have to worry about Veronica anymore. So she also overheard her mother, Cora, saying that Jillian had to die too because she supported Veronica. It's really just heartbreaking to think that Jillian's only crime was being in the wrong place at the wrong time. On April 14th of 2024, the bodies of Veronica and Jillian were found buried in a cow pasture inside a chest freezer. They were discovered after a lengthy search of property leased by Tad Colum, who had asked permission to dig on the land days before the murders, which explains how he got a hole 10 feet deep. But he told the landowner, Jamie Beasley, that he needed to do some dirt work to remove a stump and bury some concrete. Beasley, not suspecting anything, agreed to let Tad use his equipment. Now, if you own land and someone says, hey, do you mind if I dig a huge hole on your property and just bury some crap in it? Maybe we ask some questions, or maybe we, I don't know, say no, or maybe we monitor what exactly it is that they're burying on your property. Like, how does somebody just, this can't be normal, right? Am I crazy? Like, I just can't imagine asking anybody if I can bury something on their property. But anyway, once the bodies were found, investigators began to unravel the full scope of the crime. Surveillance data from burner phones purchased by Tiffany in February and March showed that the suspects were at the crime scene when Veronica's car was abandoned. The phones also pinged at the location where the bodies were eventually found, linking the group to the burial site.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And the epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
When life brings the blah, add more Yabba Dabba Doo with some tasty Fruity Pebbles. Early morning meeting. Blah. Someone brought the pebbles? Yabba Dabba Doo. Run errands? Blah. Head to the store for pebbles. Yabba Dabba Doo. Fruity Pebbles. Less blah. More Yabba Dabba Doo. Pick up Pebbles cereal today. Yabba Dabba Doo and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, and spend wisely, and parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/Spotify.
We love a dumb criminal. So there's also something really incredibly eerie about how meticulous these suspects thought they were being. Tiffany had gone to great lengths to cover her tracks. She bought the burner phones, tasers, and even searched things like how to get someone out of their house and taser pain levels. But despite all their planning, the group made one huge mistake. They didn't realize just how much technology would track their every move. Those burner phone pings essentially sealed their fate. Now, as more details came out, investigators were able to paint a clearer picture of what happened that day. The morning of the murders, the suspects set their plan in motion. Cole and Cora's daughter told investigators that her parents blocked the road Veronica and Jillian were driving on, forcing them down a dirt road where they were then ambushed. This is where Veronica's car was found abandoned, just a few miles from the meeting point. She also said that when her parents returned home, they told her things didn't go as planned, but they wouldn't have to worry about Veronica anymore. Now, can you just imagine that? These monsters came home and told their daughter that they had just murdered two women as if it was no big deal. And then they asked her to help clean out the truck after they returned, this 16-year-old girl. But aside from her testimony, law enforcement was able to track the group's use of burner phones, like I said. And Tiffany Adams purchased three burner phones back in February of 2024, around the same time that they were plotting to kill Veronica the first time. She also bought five stun guns a week before the murders, which matched her phone searches that included things like taser pain level and gun shops near me and how to get someone out of their house. These burner phones were supposed to cover their tracks, but they ended up doing the exact opposite. Investigators were able to trace the pings to Tad's house, and then on the day of the murders, all three phones pinged near the location where Veronica's car was found. In another stroke of investigative genius, data from the phones led police to the property where the bodies were found. So instead of hiding their crime, the suspects had essentially handed over their location and their entire map of their crime on a silver platter. Now, by the time the suspects were arrested, it was clear to everyone, police, family, and the public, that this was premeditated and cold-blooded. Tiffany Adams, Tad Cullum, Cole, and Cora Twombly were each charged with two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and conspiracy to commit murder. They all pleaded not guilty, which is bold given the amount of evidence against them. But as if things couldn't get more disturbing, Tiffany's behavior after the murders showed just how little remorse she had. 4 days after the murders, Tiffany was spotted on a store's security camera shopping with her grandchildren, which are Veronica's children, and she is completely unfazed. She's even wearing a shirt that says, "Jesus is my savior," which honestly just feels like a cruel joke, like a huge slap in the face. On April 15th of 2024, the arrest affidavit was made public, revealing more damning evidence. One key piece was that 10 days before the murders, Veronica had filed a petition for increased visitation rights, and she was about to be granted more time with her kids, which was something that Tiffany was desperate to stop. It's believed that this is what finally pushed her over the edge, leading to the murders. And honestly, Cole and Cora's daughter's bravery in coming forward with this information about her parents is honestly remarkable, especially considering the fear that she had to have felt living with parents who are capable of such violence. She also revealed that the group had been using burner phones to communicate about their plans, which, as we already know, didn't work out for them in the end, but it just corroborates everything that the daughter had already said. On April 17th of 2024, Tiffany and her co-conspirators appeared in court. The families of the victims were there, and emotions were understandably very high. At one point, family members had to be physically restrained because they were so enraged at the sight of the suspects. The tension in the courtroom was palpable. Family members called Tiffany a variety of expletives, including evil bitch. And there's really no doubt that those words were 100% justified. I think I could actually come up with even worse. But despite the mountain of evidence, all four suspects pled not guilty. And then a fifth suspect, 31-year-old Paul Grace, was arrested on April 24th of 2024 in connection to the murders. He was charged with the same counts of first-degree murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy to commit murder. Now, Paul Grace, who's 31 years old, was not immediately arrested with the other four suspects, but investigators quickly circled back to him as the fifth person involved in the murders. And at first, Paul was questioned and released, but it didn't take long for him to slip up and say things that raised serious red flags. So after his initial questioning, Paul made some really suspicious comments to an acquaintance, comments that effectively sealed his fate. He asked, Quote, how long does DNA stay on clothes in the dirt? And even more incriminating, how do you get someone to Mexico? It's almost as if he didn't realize that these kind of statements would catch up with him. And that, combined with his connection to the other suspects, led investigators to arrest him almost a month after the murders took place. According to his arrest affidavit, Paul admitted to his involvement in the entire plot. He detailed how he participated in the planning of the murders, the killing themselves, and even helped with the burial. This admission was huge because it added more weight to the conspiracy charge that was already looming over the heads of the other four suspects. Investigators now had multiple confessions. Tiffany had already admitted her role, and now Paul was confirming that this wasn't just a random spur-of-the-moment crime. It was cold, calculated conspiracy to murder Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. So Paul was charged with the same counts, and while he admitted his involvement, he, along with the others, still pled not guilty in court. With five suspects facing the same charges, the legal proceedings in this case are sure to be long and very drawn out. And as of now, the preliminary hearings have taken place and we've seen some intense courtroom drama, especially from the families of the victims. The first hearing, where the suspects pled not guilty, was just an emotional roller coaster, I'm sure you can imagine. And victims' family members were visibly enraged, with some trying to physically lunge at the suspects. And the grief and the anger in that courtroom were just palpable. The judge entered not guilty pleas for all five suspects, denied bail for all five of them. And this wasn't much of a surprise given the gravity of the charges and the overwhelming evidence that was stacked against them. These suspects clearly are not going anywhere until the trial. Now, one particularly interesting aspect of the pretrial motions involved the defense team's accusations that the prosecution hadn't handed over all of the evidence. This led to some delays as both sides needed more time to review everything, and the prosecution was also working on keeping certain key pieces of evidence under wraps for as long as possible to maintain the integrity of the case and also ensure that nothing was leaked out that could compromise the investigation. There was also a motion to withhold the full medical examiner's report for 6 months. And now, this was a big deal because for a while, we didn't know the exact cause of death for Veronica and Jillian. The medical examiner determined that Jillian and Veronica had been stabbed to death, and Paul Grice, in part, stabbed and killed Veronica and sliced his hand badly with the knife, while Tad killed Jillian. Then they threw their clothing, stun gun, and knife into the burial site that they actually dug prior to the murder, which makes complete sense because I don't know anyone that can just dig a 10-foot hole, a 10-foot deep hole anyway, just like at the spur of the moment, right? One more key aspect of the court proceedings involves the search warrants. These were crucial in gathering the evidence needed to arrest the five suspects, and the judge denied a motion to seal those warrants. And this means that the information uncovered during the searches, like the bloodstained clothing and weapons found on Jamie Beasley's property, was then made public, which provided insight into just how damning the physical evidence really is. So let's go ahead and break down the evidence that's been gathered so far, because it paints a very clear picture of premeditated, cold-blooded, first-degree murder. So first we have the burner phones, and like I said earlier, those phones were purchased by Tiffany in February, and the phone data shows that they were used to communicate throughout the planning stages of the murders. The phone pings placed the suspects at the crime scene and led police to directly where the bodies were buried. This alone is probably the most damning piece of evidence in the case. And then there's the physical evidence that was found at the burial site on Jamie Beasley's property. So what they uncovered during their search were Wrangler blue jeans with a black belt and what appeared to be blood stains, a brown sweatshirt also stained with blood, a black hooded sweatshirt, again with possible blood evidence, a knife in a sheath found with traces of blood, a pair of cloth gloves likely worn during the murders and also covered in blood, a black taser, which matches the purchase Tiffany made the week before the murders, electrical cord and black tape, suggesting that the victims might have been restrained or bound during the killings. This evidence ties the suspects directly to the crime, and it's hard to imagine a defense team explaining away a bloodstained knife and clothing. Additionally, the search warrants revealed that investigators were looking for kitty litter, which was found at the crime scene. Kitty litter is often used apparently to soak up blood, and its presence adds another layer of evidence suggesting a clear attempt to clean up after the murders, because why else would you just have kitty litter with you? But perhaps the most chilling piece of evidence is just how the bodies were found, buried 10 feet deep in a cow pasture inside a chest freezer. The effort to conceal the bodies shows just how far these people were willing to go to hide their crime. It wasn't enough to just kill these women. They wanted to make sure that they would never, ever, ever be found. The motive behind these murders is as heart-wrenching as it is horrifying. At its core, this was all about custody. Tiffany Adams could not stand the thought of Veronica gaining more time with her own children. The custody battle between Veronica and Wrangler had gone on for years, and Tiffany wanted to make sure Veronica stayed out of the kids' lives permanently. But it wasn't just Tiffany. Wrangler, who had his own legal and personal issues, might have also been looking for a way out. While Wrangler was confirmed to be in a rehab facility at the time of the murders, his connection to the plan is still a point of debate. Investigators have not arrested Wrangler in connection with the murders, but his earlier statements to his grandmother raise some serious questions. Wrangler allegedly told his grandmother that they wouldn't have to worry about Veronica for much longer because Tiffany knew the path the judge walks to work, implying that they might have even considered killing the judge involved in the custody case. Now, whether or not Wrangler had direct involvement in the planning, we don't know that for sure, but the possibility still lingers. And it kind of reminds me of the Adelson case. Like, how did Wendy Adelson not have any idea that her mom and brother were, you know, co-conspiring to kill her ex? Like, I just, it's hard for me to wrap my head around someone doing this without the biological parent of the children aware, right? So the question remains, was this all Tiffany's doing, or did Wrangler play a larger role than we realize? As the case progresses, more details may emerge about his involvement, but for now, he remains uncharged. As of now, all five suspects are facing the possibility of life in prison, life without parole, or even the death penalty. Now, given the overwhelming evidence and the severity of the charges, it's hard to imagine any of them getting off lightly, but the road to justice is going to be a long one. The families of Veronica and Jillian are left waiting, grieving, and hoping that justice will be served. These two women were taken far too soon, and their children, both Veronica's and Jillian's, now have to grow up without their mothers, all because of a twisted, custody-fueled vendetta. Now, we can only hope that the legal system does its job and that the five suspects responsible for this horrific crime never see the outside of a prison cell again. There's no doubt that Veronica and Jillian's families are fighting for justice, and so I'm going to be following this case closely as it moves forward. I'll probably have a part two once more stuff comes out. I don't know when the trial is actually expected to start. I feel like anytime something like this happens and we're kind of in the midst of it, they might set a date for the trial to start, but I feel like more often than not, it almost always gets pushed back. So just stay tuned. I'll try to get an update once there's enough information for one. But until then, thank you so much for listening. Mama Mystery out. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.